Everybody, it's Kai Ryssdal. Thanks for checking out this episode of the Corner Office Podcast. Last time around, we brought you an episode from the Marketplace Archives, my full interview with Warren Buffett. Seems like y'all really enjoyed that one. So in honor of Valentine's Day, two interviews, both related to the holiday. The first is with Jim McCann, the founder and CEO of 1-800-Flowers, which, say what you will, was definitely ahead of its time technology-wise. Talked to him back in 2014. Also, Tarek Farid, the founder and CEO of Edible Arrangements, whose business managed to do really well during the Great Recession. And we talk about why. His interview is from 2015. Here you go, starting with Jim McCann, including some parts we haven't played before.
We're expecting you. Won't you have a seat?
Ready to go to work?
Jim McCann, good to have you with us.
Good to be here, Kai.
Not to cast aspersions on your chosen line of work, but 1-800-Flowers? I mean, 800 numbers are kind of, I don't know, passé?
Well, way long ago in a land far away in the 1980s, it was the hot new technology, Kai. And then in the early 90s, we decided to add this .com thing onto the back of it. And we don't have to say convenience when we say our name. Our name screams convenience.
That's right. You guys are all about the latest and greatest. I will tell you that when I buy flowers for my wife, and that's not a frequent occurrence, I will grant you that, as she will tell
She's
you.
Mentioned that to us in a posting
on
Twitter.
I know, right? I can't get them to last more than a couple of days, and yet here you are, especially this time of year, shipping flowers thousands and thousands of miles. How does that work?
Well, the answer is we don't always ship them thousands and thousands of miles. We do what we can to buy our product in each local market where we can, but we grow our product as well offshore in places this time of the year that have the contrary weather pattern, like places like South America. So yes, we ship those, but then we treat them, condition them, hydrate them in our local facilities so that they're coming to you from very short distances.
Speaking of local facilities, did I read that you have 6,000 people in Miami prepping and shipping and doing all that stuff?
Unfortunately, the answer would be yes.
Wow, that's a lot of people.
It's a lot of people. But this is a crazy time of the year for us in the florist business because Valentine's Day is this crazy holiday in the middle of what is otherwise a quiet quarter when weather conditions cause me to have the hairline that I have. Yeah.
You know, it's funny. You said florist business. Do you consider yourself a florist or are you a transportation company, basically?
Oh, no. I am and we are florists. I've been a florist for 38 years, and I'm 40 years old, so I started very young. I've been a florist most of my adult life, and yes, transportation is something that we do, and yes, technology is something we use, but at the end of the day, our job is to be your florist and your florist and gift company, and that's what we are, and that's what we strive to be better at every day.
How'd you get into the flower business, Jim?
An accident.
And those are the best ways, aren't they?
It oftentimes is. It's, you know, it's if you're really smart and focused as a young person, good sense of direction, you might say, I want to go to law school or I might want to have a career in the armed forces, those kinds of things. For me, it was looking for a way to I've only had two careers in my life, Kai, and first one was fun I stumbled into, and that was in the social services. Mm. So here in New York City, I lived in and then wound up running a home for teenage boys. Mm. Wonderful career. I loved it. It made me who I am. I learned so much from that experience and from those young men that I worked with. But you tend to starve in the not-for-profit social work world. And I married young. We started a family in a very young age. And our kids wanted to do some really strange things like eat and go to school and buy clothes. So always supplementing my income. And one of those things was tending bar here in New York City. And I did that Friday and Saturday nights when I was now the administrator at a home because it wasn't 24/7 anymore. And one of my customers, we'll call him Scotch and Soda, owned the flower shop across the street from the pub I worked in, and he told me he was going to be selling it. And I asked if I couldn't work there a couple of Saturdays before I came to work at the bar, that maybe I'd be an interested buyer. I did that. I liked it. I thought it was really interesting business, a way to be involved in people's lives at very interesting celebratory moments. And I bought that flower shop and then did both for about 8 more years, kept my full-time job because I went into the business not only to be a florist, but to try and build a company.
And how did it come to pass that you got to the 1-800-Flowers? I mean, I made fun of you, but it does seem to me that getting into the toll-free business for flowers and then eventually the .com thing for flowers makes a whole bunch of distribution avenue sense.
Well, our job is to, at the essence of it is what we do as a floral and gift company, a floral and gift shop, is help our customers act on their thoughtfulness. So you may have, in the course of a day, Kai, two or three, four occasions when you say, I ought to drop so-and-so a note. I ought to call and say thanks for this. Maybe I'd like to send something to someone to help me with some travel plans or an engineer who did – well, okay, that's not possible. Yeah. But you have those thoughts throughout the day. If we're convenient and we're accessible and we have the right products at the right price points, you're more likely to act on that thoughtfulness. So that's why when we were a chain of retail shops operating under the name Flora Plenty, I realized that when the 800 number technology broke out, that would be very convenient. We wouldn't have to spend a lot of money for people to remember our telephone number if it was a name. So when we changed the name of our shops in 1986 and 87 to 1-800-Flowers, people thought we were nuts.
Yeah.
How could you name a company a telephone number, and how could you change the name of your physical locations to a telephone number? But we just thought convenience, being there to help your customer, made a lot of sense, and we had some good fortune along the way where we actually became a brand.
Do you find yourself the brand now? I mean, what's your competition, I guess?
Well, the answer is lots of competition, both from within our industry and now. You know, one of the things that helped us for a long time, Kai, is that we could deliver same day around the country, around the world, and of course, the next day. But now these little companies like FedEx and UPS and now all the new alternative delivery companies, we have to sharpen our game all the time to make sure we have the products that people want, not just the thing that they have to default to get. So it really makes us sharpen our edges to make sure we're bringing good products to market.
What happens to you if Jeff Bezos and Amazon get into flowers?
Well, they are in flowers and they have been for a long time. And we sell on Amazon. And we cooperative bidding process with them in terms of we sell on them, they sell their own product. If we're not good enough to beat someone who sells everything in a commodity form, then shame on us. Hmm. So far, we're doing pretty well.
Walk me through the logistics of this week in your corporate life.
Well, there's not a lot of sleep involved. and we have, you know, it's a little bit like a sausage factory in that we've been doing this for so long. We know how to ramp up to get all those people to know what they're doing and to be on site for us in Miami, as you mentioned, which is the importation point for most South American product. We have our flower shops around the country, 7,000-8,000 flower shops around the country, and we work with them for months in advance in terms of their planning schedules, training the extra drivers they hire, working with them to make sure they have the right technology to have those drivers connected so that we know where each and every delivery is. So it's a big, big orchestration job, and it's a challenging environment, but it's one we've been doing for so long that it's sort of like our Super Bowl a week later.
In other industries, the price rise that we see on flowers is called surge pricing, right? Uber famously got in trouble for surge pricing during storms, charging more money. How come you guys make us pay more to show our love, if you will?
Well, Kai, you've just betrayed the frequency with which you purchase flowers.
Yeah, not all
the
that
answer is, the answer is we don't. There is, of course, a surge in price that we pay for product, which makes it a very difficult time to be profitable. But we see this opportunity of Valentine's Day as an opportunity to engage with new and more customers. So you can see we're a public company. We have publicly disclosed financials. It's a very slim margin business, but it's a chance to earn and discover a whole lot of new customers. So our prices go up. We do our best to manage that. Of course, volume goes way up too. So we do have an opportunity, not a guarantee, but an opportunity for a slight margin. But generally speaking, we eat most of the price increases so that we can capture more customers, become more customers for us to be with us in March and April and May and June when there are birthdays and anniversaries and new babies and sympathy occasions. So we see it as an opportunity to grow our market share.
What, speaking now as a professional florist, what is your favorite flower?
Well, it's, you know, in the long, long time that I've been in this business, Kai, it's amazing the availability product, the quality of the product that we get to sell gets better every year. the growing techniques, the transportation, the whole cold chain, all of which improves all the time, and we have some small hand in helping those improvements. So it's exciting to see the variety and the depth. But at the end of the day, if I'm going to take a bunch of a bouquet home on a Friday afternoon, which I often do, I wanted something that I can design myself at home, and roses are always going to be the hotbed of whatever I bring home because the range of color, the variety, I just think they're the royalty of the floral world.
You know, I agree with you, but the thing is, when you give roses, you're always like, oh, man, guys have been giving roses for hundreds of years. How cliche is that?
There's a reason for that.
Jim McCann, the CEO and founder of 1-800-Flowers.com. Jim, thanks very much for your time.
Great to be with you, Kai, and happy Valentine's Day.
Thank you. You too.
All right, so that's it for my conversation with Jim McCann. He's the CEO of 1-800-Flowers, but there is more. Tariq Fareed is the founder and CEO of Edible Arrangements. It's like a bouquet of flowers, but the flowers are made of fruit. I talked to him about 3 years ago, back in 2015. Tariq Fareed, good to have you with us.
Nice to be here, Kai.
I'm going to ask the first question that popped into my mind when I saw one of these things, which was, why?
Why not? I mean, you know, it's
touché.
So, you know, I was in the flower business. So yeah. I started a flower shop when I was 17 and been in the flower business 12, 13 years, saw a fruit arrangement and then just started playing around at the flower shop and opened one on the side of the flower shop. And it was just a hit. As soon as we showed it to the customers and we started delivering it, people loved it. And, you know, and at that point, we're like, why not? Let's just go with it. We started with a tiny, about 600 square foot store, and it took off.
What did you do? Did you go to this, you know, supermarket and buy a bunch of fruit and carve it and cut it up yourself and stick it in the arrangements?
Well, actually, the supermarket wouldn't work because the kind of fruit we were looking for, the taste for us, the taste and look is very important. So I was very lucky to go down to the market and go talk to people that sold fruit. I knew a lot about flowers. I didn't know much about fruit. And it was pretty amazing. They started to tell you what the premium pineapple is, what the premium strawberry is, what seasons and all those things. So I spent the first 6 or 7 months just playing around and, you know, we had to develop cutting tools. We had to do a lot of things to kind of find out what the base of the arrangement would be, how you have to have food safe baskets that it has to go into.
Oh, yeah, cool.
So it was just a lot of fun and we put it together and you know, and then we started to sell it about March 1999.
And I don't want to get too grand here, but it's almost a worldwide empire. I mean, there's like 1,000 stores out there.
We have close to 1,200 and we're in about 14 countries. We've been very, very lucky. It's just been such an amazing journey.
It plays well overseas, clearly.
It does. You know, fruit's pretty universal.
Yeah.
We localize it a bit. You know, in China, where you know, it's a hit in China. We're doing really well. That's probably our strongest market outside the U.S. and Canada. And it's been a pleasant surprise too. You know, we'd had difficulty finding some of the fruits. But we haven't. We've been able to source them. We've been able to keep the consistency and the quality. And people like that, and especially overseas in China. They like, you know, they like things that are American. They, you know, a lot of the brands are doing well. And it's nice to see a fruit brand that's good for you doing well.
You give a lot of credit to your early adoption of technology in helping grow and really sort of catapult this business.
Yes. In the beginning as you asked why, majority of the people that I went to ask for money, they would probably ask that and they did not think we would succeed. So it was really difficult from trying to get financing from banks. I mean, you would fill in the applications. You would do all the things that needed, but then they would deny you. So as we did and we needed to – you know, as we were growing – you needed a lot of staff. You needed a lot of resources and everything. So we leaned on technology from, you know, what a time for the websites to be coming to life in 1999, 2000, where the web allowed us to handle a lot more customers instead of actually having to have a lot of people on the phone. So from there, we just started to create all different technologies within even the franchise to support our franchisees to be successful. And it's worked very well for us.
When did you know that you were going to make it with this idea?
I think the first Easter in 1999, it was Easter. We sold about 28 arrangements and it took us all day to make them because we had no tools. We used to cut everything by hand. But customers would call back, and normally customers don't call you back and say, hey, this was a great hit. Wow, it was amazing. And then they're asking about Mother's Day is coming up. I want to do something for Mother's Day. Because on Easter, we couldn't take that many orders and people wanted to order early. So when you saw that, you knew you were onto something. And even though at that time I started running around to banks and running around to different people to raise money, no one thought we would actually make it. But the customers kept coming back and kept calling and saying, you know, I sent it. I never really get a wow. I usually don't get a call. And I got a call, people asking, where'd you get this? How can I get one?
What's biggest for you, Easter or Mother's Day? Or maybe a different one. I don't know.
Valentine's Day and Mother's Day are probably neck and neck.
Valentine's Day? Seriously? People give
Valentine's
fruit on Valentine's
Day? Valentine's is big. Strawberries? Chocolate-covered strawberries? Come on, tell me.
Let's not even get in it. Don't even go there. Don't even go there.
Don't tell me you haven't sent chocolate-covered strawberries on Valentine's Day.
No, we're not going there. We're not going there. How do you scale? Do you have – is it must be at least partially automated now, right? I mean, it can't be a bunch of people in the back of all these stores doing the cutting.
Oh, there's a bunch of people in the back of the stores doing cutting, and we're lucky enough to develop patented equipment that we've come up with in our back offices and our back kitchens and everything that cut the pineapple, cut the cantaloupe, and slice the pineapple slices, you know, patented skewers. A lot of things that we've developed and processes we've developed on above and beyond the technology that helps us to make a lot more arrangements. So that first day we spend 9 or 10 hours making 30 arrangements. We have stores on Valentine's Day that'll make 1,000 arrangements in one day. You know, so it've come a long way.
Do people rip you off? I mean, do you go out and see, you know, fakes and knockoffs and imposters?
You'll always get a little bit of that. You know, it seems that the business is easier. It's just like anything. People think it's a lot easier from the outside. There's a lot that goes into it. We have been very, very lucky to have about 700 to, you know, 750 franchisees who own these 1,200 stores. Hmm. And these are local business owners, local Main Street business owners. And they've worked very, very hard. And our staff at the store level work very hard to put these things together. And consistency, quality, taste, all these things are very important to us. To get all that right, there's a lot of work involved. And as you talked about the technology, I mean, we have a website that handles about 50% of our business. So there's a large team and a large group behind this. So of course, you know, people will, different companies will come up or different people will come up and make the arrangements and everything. But, you know, I've always been more concerned about what we do, not about what others do. Yeah. And it's been a very successful formula and we stay with that.
Giving, arranged fruit is quite the example of discretionary income, right? I mean, people don't do this if they need to make the rent. So I want to ask you the economic indicator question, because I imagine during the recession you had a tough time. And what are you looking at now in terms of sort of your short-term forecast?
See, Kai, everybody thinks that. You know, I started in 1999. A year later, the wheels fell off.
Right.
And those were our best year. And then in 2008, as the economy, you know, we hit another bump, a big bump this time actually, and people felt the same thing. And this is probably why the banks were having difficulty lending us money in the beginning, because they thought it was discretionary income. People will spend. Birthdays have to be celebrated. Love has to continue. And from that point, people want to send something of value, and nothing is of more value that it looks great and then you can eat it. So, and that's where edible arrangements comes in, that it's just perfect. It arrives, it looks like a flower arrangement, but it's fresh fruit. You know, it's nothing that you have to feel guilty about. It's lovingly arranged and it looks beautiful, has chocolate-covered strawberries, chocolate-covered bananas. So it's been a hit. And we, you know, some of our best years were 2008, 2009. So we've done well in the downturn because people are looking for value.
Tariq Fareed, the founder and CEO of Edible Arrangements. Thanks a lot.
Thank you very much, Kai.
All right, that was it. Tariq Fareed is the founder and CEO of Edible Arrangements. Also, first up was Jim McCann, the CEO of 1-800-Flowers. Kind of cool. They both started as florists and built these global companies. Thanks a lot for listening. Hope you liked this double feature episode. If you did, tell us what you thought in a review on Apple Podcasts. We do appreciate those, so long as you're, you know, kind. The Corner Office Podcast is produced by Bridget Bodner. The interviews you heard today, though, were produced by Tommy Andres and Daisy Palacios.
Marketplace on the Radio is produced by Nancy Fargali. Sitar Nieves is the executive director of On Demand. Deborah Clark is the senior vice president and general manager. I'm Kai Rizdal. We're back in a couple of weeks.